This audio production is presented by Good Shepherd Presbyterian Church in Ocala, Florida. For more resources, visit us online at gspcocala.com.
I noticed a child moving right in the corner of my eye, and I thought, oh, my son's doing hand motions, and Christopher was over there moving, but he wasn't doing hand motions. He was flossing. And if you don't know what flossing is, it's not a dental thing. There's a video of Ben McCormick doing it somewhere that I'm sure Ben would love to show you. But I digress, or whatever the opposite of move from something trivial to something important. There's a quote that Mike uses on the bulletin from time to time from Annie Dillard that I think sets us up for this passage well. She says, "Why do people in church seem like cheerful, brainless tourists on a package tour of the absolute? Does anyone have the foggiest idea what sort of power we blithely invoke? Or, as I suspect, does no one believe a word of it? The churches are children playing on the floor with their chemistry sets, mixing up a batch of TNT to kill on a Sunday morning. It is madness to wear ladies' straw hats and velvet hats to church. We should all be wearing crash helmets. Ushers should issue life preservers and signal flares. They should lash us to our pews. For the sleeping God may wake someday and take offense, or the waking God may draw us to where we can never return." We are in the midst of cosmic warfare. And it's not simply just a Sunday morning thing either. It's not Taco Tuesday, right? It's Cosmic Warfare Tuesday. Every day, every moment, you are in the midst of warfare. You watch war movies? Some guys do, right? Some ladies do, right? There's always the guy who knows what he's doing. There's the young guy who's in battle for the first time and panics and is just frantic the whole time. But the guys who know how to fight are the same in the middle of the battle as they are when the battle's not happening, right? So don't say we're in cosmic warfare to make you just panic and say, what's going on? No. In a sense, Genesis 3:15 is the overarching story for everything that we live in. The promise that the seed of the woman will crush the head of the serpent while the serpent bruises his heel is the story in which we live. The story in which there is a battle where the serpent is being crushed and at the same time bruising. Ultimately, it happened on the cross. But day to day, we still experience the nature of that warfare. Even though Satan is a defeated enemy, he still is an enemy who works about trying to destroy us. And so we see in this story the nature of the battle, the nature of the enemy. Quite simply, we see the power of evil. Last week we talked about Christ calming the storm only to cause a greater storm within us. How he uses those storms to lead us to him. This morning I want to invite you to wrestle with the question that I think if you're not one who wrestles with the circumstances of your life and you're trying to follow Jesus, you probably wrestle with the enemy within. You wrestle with evil. You wrestle with your seeming inability to conquer that wickedness that was before your conversion and seems to cling so tightly. It is the Romans 7, wretched man. And the question that I want you to wrestle with is Jesus powerful enough to deal with that? Surely he is Lord over the storms of your life, but is he powerful enough to deal with the enemy within and the enemy without? So in this, what quite honestly is a weird little story, we first see the power of evil, and we see it through this man with an unclean spirit. If you will, this the setting is triple action filth. It is as dirty as you can get. They've crossed the sea, and again, this is the boat ride in which Jesus calms the storm. They come up, and it doesn't seem they come up on a city. Instead, perhaps Jesus was taking them to a place of rest, theoretically, which typically when Jesus goes to a place for rest, no rest happens. And as they come up on the shore, they are greeted by this man with an unclean spirit. And it's one of the ways that Mark is nuanced in the way he talks about what Jesus is up to. He refers to people who have a demon first as those with an unclean spirit. Now, Jesus has landed in the region of the Gerasenes in the Decapolis. It is a place where there are Gentiles. Again, people who are unclean. But on top of that, this man, this demon-possessed, unclean man in the unclean land comes from the tombs, a place that was unclean because the dead were there. And then to make triple action, quadruple action, we got pigs. And as Americans, as Southern Americans, we value pigs differently than Jewish people in the first century did. But it's a place where filth, where unclean is the word of the day. And if you know biblically the image of unclean, if you know the laws of cleanliness and the laws that Jesus gave his people in the Old Testament to stay clean ritually and to be pure, the purpose of those laws was not just to set up boundaries. Yes, it was to make them a people set apart, but it was also to teach them the absolute depth of their depravity. If you look at the clean laws of the Old Testament, you and I would both say the difficulty of staying ritually clean and pure is almost ridiculous. And yes, that's the point. So that you understand that everywhere you go, you are in danger of being defiled. Everything you do is a chance that you may become unclean. So anytime you hear this word unclean, the idea is to understand that it's talking about the power and the depth and the extent of which sin clings so deeply. In the ways that no matter where you go, it is there. And so this man with an unclean spirit living among the unclean area, unclean people and unclean animals comes at Jesus. Notice what they've tried to do to this man. Mark gives us more detail than anybody else. An attempt to deal with the uncleanness, an attempt to deal with this problem. They've tried to distance themselves. They've tried to shackle him, to bind him. They've tried to make it so they could control the problem. But this man is obviously uncontrollable, right? He is paradoxically the strongest and most bound man in the world. Nobody can bind him. He wrenches the chains and the shackles. No matter what they do, they can't control the filth that is this man. And yet, even he can't control himself. He is both powerful and impotent at the same time. And you can sense it as he goes about the mountains day in and day out, crying out. Even he knows he has no power over the thing that makes him so powerful. Perhaps that's why he cuts himself, in an attempt to find some relief from the dominance of what's going on inside of him. The power of evil and the power of sin is nothing to be lazy about. Jesus himself calls Satan the strong man. The enemy is powerful. Paul reminds us in Ephesians 6 that we don't wage war against flesh and blood. It's not something that we can shackle. It's not something we can distance ourselves from, but instead it is there. And so as Jesus steps out of the boat, we don't get the scene drawn in such a way that it is really intelligible, because it tells you what the man does, and then it tells you what Jesus was doing while the man was doing what he did. So let me try and paint it a little bit for you. As they step off of the boat, this man comes running from the tombs. He sees Jesus from afar and is running, not... There is nothing in his words that tell us he's running to get freedom. There's nothing in his words that tell us he's running to worship Jesus. He is running because cosmic warfare. Jesus has stepped onto a battleground of unclean filth all around, and he is being attacked. And so this man filled with demons comes running at him, not saying, "Welcome," not saying, "Help me," but notice the words he says, "What have you to do with me?" If I said that to you, would you think I was happy to see you? If you show up in my office and say, "What do I have to do with you? What do you have to do with me?" It's not a welcome, right? And even in the language, the word I think is difficult. Some of you are brilliant, so you get this. But when he says, "I adjure you," you know that word is not simply, "I beg you." It has a connotation of command. It is not a connotation of humility. This man is coming to attack. He's not coming to worship. And while he is running at Jesus from afar, yelling at him, Jesus too is in warfare. And saying to the man over and over again, "Come out of him, come out of the man, you unclean spirit." I think this is why the man says, "Do not torment me." It's because Jesus, don't think Jesus doesn't know what he's doing, but if the man is inhabited by a legion of demons, and moment by moment Jesus is saying to this legion, this almost, if you will, family of demons, "Come out of him," perhaps moment by moment he is tearing legion apart. And legion is saying, "You are destroying me. You are terrorizing me." And he falls down at his feet. And in this moment, he confesses. Jesus says, "What is your name?" And he says, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And you begin to get the sense of the depth of the evil, of the sin that is in this man. And this odd thing happens, where they say, "Don't destroy us, but if you would, send us into the pigs. Don't send us out of this area." There's something they like about it. There's something that the demons find at home there. And so they ask for permission. Again, we see that Jesus is fully in control. And he grants them permission to go into the pigs. Now, there's a couple of interesting things. One, why would they want to stay there? There is some sense in which they feel at home, that they have power there, that nobody is aware of them somehow. You also wonder, why doesn't Jesus destroy them, right? Why doesn't he just end it right there? Why does he let, they ask for something and he gives it to them? It's Romans 1, right? He hands us over to our own evil desires. And some of you are thinking, those poor pigs, right? Why? Jesus shows them kindness, right? Remember, he is coming to cleanse. And so as he's setting this man free from an unclean spirit, he is cleaning this land. And so perhaps the reason he lets them go into the pigs is to not let the land be defiled. It's not a lack of compassion. Actually, I think it's even more compassionate, because when he sends these demons out of this man and into the pigs, for the first time, this man and anybody who's watching finally begins to get a picture of what was going on inside of this man. We live in a city where homeless people gather, right? And oftentimes in the homeless community, you get mental illness. And so you and I both, as we drive around our community, we see people who are obviously mentally ill. I've got one guy in particular that I see all the time. And he walks around talking and screaming out. And my knee-jerk reaction is, that dude's crazy. And I'm sure with this man, everybody in his community just thought, he's just nuts. He's just lost his mind. Let's just stay away from him. He's out, kids, don't worry, that's just crazy Joe. He's just out there yelling. And then for the first time, when Jesus sends these demons and lets them go into 2,000 pigs, you think that was going on inside of him? That's what he was in? It wasn't some simple, things aren't quite right with him. The depth of the evil that was within him was enough to take out 2,000 animals. And notice, in the midst of all of it, does Jesus ever seem like he's outmanned by it? Does Jesus ever even seem nervous? He's fully in control. Not in the slightest does he seem to be threatened, because as he says, I have come to bind the strong man, and he has bound him. And as he said in Mark 2, and after I've bound him, I will take what I want. The power of evil in this, it will make your skin crawl. And at the same time, Jesus comes in and is not threatened by it in the slightest. So that he casts the demons out and this man is cleansed. So that when the herdsmen run away because it's nothing for a crazy guy to be made normal, but when they lose all their pigs, a big problem has happened. So they run to tell everybody. And when everybody comes back, they see Jesus and they see this man sitting there, sitting, clothed, in his right mind. And they are overjoyed? Taking up a donation? They're afraid. Said it over and over again. It is so rare that a miracle creates converts. Most of the time when Jesus acts miraculously, people are terrified. And perhaps the hardest part about it is the demons want to stay. And the people don't want Jesus there, which has to scare you. We talk about the power of evil, the depth of our depravity, the extent of our uncleanness. We don't know why, but there's something in the hearts of the people of this land that when they lose their pigs and they see a man who had been bound, they're more worried about the loss of pigs than they are about the joy of what brought that freedom. They're more concerned with how do we move on if this guy's here than they are with the fact that somebody has the power to set them free. Perhaps that's your struggle with evil, that the cost of freedom seems too much. Don't think for a moment that this was the only man who was being oppressed by the unclean, by the filth, by the evil of this place. Because everybody else didn't see it. Instead, they chose what they thought was freedom. They chose to be bound. And they begged Jesus to leave. And again, Jesus hands them over to their own desires. And he leaves. And the man who did have an unclean spirit looks at Jesus and he says the words that Jesus had said to his disciples. When he asks the 12, he teaches them, he wants them to be with him. And this man looks at Jesus and says, "Let me be with you." And terror among terrors, Jesus says, "No." Notice the word is, he did not permit him. He permitted, gave permission to the demons to go into the pigs. And yet when a man says, "Let me go with you," Jesus says, "I'm not going to let you do that." It's hard, right? Y'all looking at me like, give me that explanation, right? Sorry. It's part of the difficulty of following after Jesus is we lose our freedom to do what we want, but instead are bound to his will. And it's the freest thing we'll ever know. Jesus is leaving this area to their own desires and yet will not leave them without somebody to tell them. So he says to the man, "I want you to go back to your friends." That one day he had friends. "I want you to go back to your friends and I want you to tell them all that the Lord has done for you." And typically you don't get this from Jesus. He gives him a specific. "I want you to tell them how the Lord has had mercy on you." It's a weird little story. Jesus shows up, gets out, has a fight, gets back in the boat, and is gone. What can we learn from it? I do want you to see the power of evil, the power of sin. That it is not something that you can bind up. It's not something you can control. It's not something that you can try and distance yourself from so that it does not have power. But instead, if you don't address it, it will own you. You cannot get freedom from it on your own. You cannot cause yourself to stop sinning. You cannot set yourself free from the things that entangle and bind you. But instead, you need a more powerful one to come and set you free. What Jesus shows us in this story is his power over evil. His power over the enemy that is within. That he is the one who has bound the strong man. He is the one who has crushed the head of the enemy. He is the one who has the power to set you free. And lastly, I think we can learn from this that it is difficult to choose that freedom. In a land that is surrounded by filth, only one of them, and it was the one who was so desperate that he spent his night screaming out, cutting himself, trying to find freedom. Everybody else who went about their merry way said this was too much. But it's the one who was desperate, who was oppressed by the enemy within. That was the one who actually followed Jesus. Let me pray for you. Father, would you help us to see the depths of our sin, of our depravity? And from those depths, would you, by your Spirit, make us to cry out so that we can see you overpower the enemy, that you would set us free from the sin that so easily entangles us. God, open our eyes so that we see that, so that we don't blindly go about afraid of your power, but instead that we would find freedom in you ruling over us. In Christ's name, amen.